obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Pete Bingham, real alcoholic. Podium with a drink holder. Love it. You know, I want to thank this committee, who's primarily made up of almost 100% of women. Now, I like women. And this is not going to be a Bruce Jenner moment, but I like women, and you guys, is it too soon? And I just want to thank this committee, because it's been running really, really smooth. And some of us get to do this, and I know how much it takes. It's the most inconvenient thing sometimes to do. But the takeaway from these things are awesome. And, you know, for me, way back when, I had to kind of jump through this comfort level that we all come in here with. And when I started volunteering to do stuff, it really made a difference in my self-esteem, because that was the one thing I didn't think I was ever going to get back. So thank you for the committee. I want to thank Rainey. I want to thank Heather. I want to thank whoever else was involved for getting us here. I really appreciate it. I want to welcome those new folks that had the courage to identify. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You never have to drink again if you don't want to. You never have to drink again if you do want to. And you don't have to hurt yourself anymore. Because when I came to you, I was drinking against my will and I could not stop. I didn't think this was going to work for me. These countdowns are important for a guy like me because I'm a counter and I'm a judger. And I need empirical evidence for me to stick around here. That's basically one of my parts of my big story. And I remember we have a roundup where I live in Torrance that we have every year. And I remember I kind of dreaded those countdowns because I was new and I didn't have a year or I had a couple months, you know, and you had to stand up. But I kept coming back and I kept coming back, and pretty soon it got easier when I got a year, and it got a little bit easier when I got 2 years. You know, the feelings when you get these years and you get to celebrate it. And I had never been sober before. I didn't know what this world was. This was bizarreness. And I kept coming back, and I kept going to these countdowns, and I keep going to these conventions. And pretty soon, it got easier and easier. And I'm here to tell the new folks, don't let anybody chase you out of here. I identify as a real alcoholic, but trust me, I've done mountains of drugs. And if, you know, if one of these fossils roll up to you one day, you know, and you're like, you're young, and they roll up to you and they say, well, you know, you're not really old enough to be an alcoholic. I want you to turn around and say, listen, Jurassic, how old do you have to be to die? Because what I have is a fatal progressive illness that is out to get me, no matter what I'm going to do. And I'm here to tell you that in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't have a cure here, but we have a solution. And the solution is contained in this blue book that was written a long time ago. And it's contained in a fellowship, because hopefully you'll surround yourself with a lot of wingmen and a lot of wingwomen, which I had to do. I had to get the guys that were in my sobriety belt, and we hung out, and we judged the speakers, and we went out for coffee, and we smoked cigarettes, and we lied to our sponsors, and we did all these things that we're supposed to do. But we kept coming back, and we got a home group, and we hung out, and we got better. And I'm here to tell you, if there's anything that I can possibly tell you about my experience, is this: if you quit drinking and you put down the drugs, your life will get better. I promise you. It has for me in so many ways. You know, here they have a jerk like me up here as a spiritual speaker. Now, I can't promise you that. I'm going to share a little experience, strength, and the hope might be on your end on that. But, you know, we all have a story. Um, 5,922 days. And if we have any tweakers in the room, stop thinking! Now, I know we got tweakers in Ventura, because in Hermosa we got them and they're coming in. I know, because I sponsor you people. And you take shit apart and never put it back together. Never. You have this infinity with brushes and grout. And, you know, when I came in, I thought I was really smart, and I turned to my sponsor, and I go, what is this? What is this dichotomy? What's this difference between the drug addict and the alcoholic? And, of course, I thought about it, because I'm a big thinker. And I figured it out. For the alcoholics, do you remember Tile? Do you remember, like, you know, you're out for a nice run, you're hammered one night, and you come home, and you put your face on that tile? I mean, we're talking like pottery-type tile, not linoleum. Tile, you know, it's cool. I don't know about you, but I used to do that all over the place, whether it was a public urinal or like a friend's kitchen. Oh, like you've never done it. Jeez. And there's a comfort level for the alcoholic that's on that tile because it's cool and it's safe. But for the drug addict and for the tweaker and for the crack monster, it's carpeting. And I figured it out. It's carpeting. It provides hope. And it provides entertainment. I can't tell you how many times I've been working with a guy and we're reading the book and I got carpeting in my house and invariably he'll do this. And I'm like, focus. Hey, focus. And he'll say, I thought I saw something. How many dust bunnies have you smoked? Fuck. So if you're here and you're an alcoholic or you're a crack monster or heaven forbid you're something even worse than all of that, stick around. You deserve to be here. You've paid the highest price of any club you could possibly join. Think of what you've done to get here. You probably burned out all your friends. You probably disappointed and shamed your family. I know the county of Los Angeles was relieved when I finally came in. You know, and first of all, what were you doing to yourself? This is a safe zone here. We know exactly what you're going through. Like they said, Bob said it the best to one of the new people that came in. We know exactly how you feel because each of us have had one day. We've been there. We know exactly what you want. My home group was a little harsh to me when I came in. They said, we don't want anything you got, Pete, but we want everything for you. And I didn't believe it at first because I thought I'd never heard that before. There's always a string attached to everything I've been involved with. But it's true. Stay here. Find out who you are. Find out what you are. Hang out with us. If you need to go to another fellowship, that's fine. Remember, there's over 200 and something fellowships based on these 12 steps, and they work when they are worked. So I welcome you if you're new. I've got 16 and a half years, my 5,922 days at a time. It's the longest sobriety I ever had, so you can judge me accordingly like we do with speakers. My home group is the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag. It meets on Monday nights in Hermosa Beach. If you be a male allergic and you be in town at an 8:30 on a Monday night, please get my card after the meeting. And the reason why I say that is it's in my home group, in Josh's home group, it's an 8:30 meeting. I have to get there at 7 o'clock to get my seat. And the reason why is because we put together some of the finest. There's between 100 and 110 drunks in that room any given Monday. And what is really, really comforting about that is we did some math at one convention. About 30% of our home group is under the age of 21. Josh came in when he was 18. I was there. And the thing about it is these guys are not just dancing around the fringes of the room. They're actually being sponsored, they're sponsoring, and they're a part of. And I'm so proud of that homebrew because they're doing the young people's thing. They're drinking enough Red Bull to float the Titanic. But they're showing up, they're piling in the cars, they're going places. I mean, one of my new guys, he happens to be Hispanic. He's going to drive to the International, they're going to rent a van. He's going to drive to Atlanta from Gardena with about five of his boys that are under a year, and they're going to go to meetings all along the way. I think that's really cool. So So when that person comes to you, and if they haven't already, and they say, are you willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol? You better think about that answer, because it's going to save your life if it's the correct answer. And I'll tell you, I've had more fun than I could even stand around here. So I have a home group. My sponsor's name is JS. He's in Sedona, Arizona right now. He and Adele send their love. I have a grand sponsor. My sponsor Saturday, he turned, he's got a case and a half of sobriety. For the Al-Anons, that's 36 years. Right? It's okay. It's all right. No, there's going to be no math here, I promise. And my grand sponsor, Paul, who's down in Oceanside, he's got 42 years. And he got sober. Both of them got sober at the age of 24. So one more time, newcomer, if you be young, this is for you. We are for you. We want to support you in every way possible. I was talking earlier with somebody. I came in at 38. I don't remember my 20s and 30s. I don't remember my professors in college. I don't remember, you know, the combinations on your lockers when you were going to school. I don't remember a lot of stuff. I had to ask my ex-wife half of my story because I was blacking out so bad in the last 10 years. Really. So if you're here, man, I'm so proud of you. You're young because you're ahead of the curve. You're doing something to save your own ass right now, and it's going to pay off much, much. The dividends down the line are going to be great. So again, I'm just big on the young people here and always will be. Let me tell you a little bit about my great-grand sponsor, Harry. He died about 5 years ago, but Harry died with 55 years of sobriety. We have any history buffs in the room. Harry was sponsored by a guy named Jimmy Burwell. Jimmy Burwell is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous as the agnostic. He was the guy that was working with Bill Wilson on the book, and he came to that point where Bill was preaching a lot of God and a lot of Christian stuff, and he said, you know what, why don't you tone this thing down? Why don't you temper it with something like maybe as, I don't know, God as you understand it. So we have a direct lineage. My lineage goes right back to the first 10 in Alcoholics Anonymous. And a little story about Jimmy. When I came here, I never cried. When I came here, I didn't have feelings. And I started picking up on your humor around here. And the humor around here is we cry at your victories. We cry at your triumphs. Because it is so sweet, we're not supposed to live. We're supposed to F up, and we're supposed to keep relapsing. We're supposed to drift off. But I cry at your victories. I cry at the sweetness around here. But we laugh at our tragedies. And we get some terrible nicknames around here. Right? Oh, my God. I mean, I've seen guys, you know, leave because of the nicknames we give them. But the really cool thing is when Harry was the young plumber that he cut a hole in the top of a liquor store in Cleveland, Ohio, and he stole a case of Cutty Sark. I mean, that's the length that he would go to. And I understand that. That was going on in the 50s, you know? And the story about Harry that I love so much is he was the old guy down at the Carlsbad workshop on Thursday nights down in Carlsbad, California. And he had the frickin' hinge. He had the commitment as the greeter. Now, when I came in, I, you know, it's midway through, I was doing everything. I mean, I did 8 years in general service. I did about every commitment and every meeting I could do. I was secretary of our home group, just like Josh. Josh has rotated out as our secretary, and that's a big thing in our home group. You know, and I'm doing all these things, and I thought I was a real doer, man. I'm volunteering for everything, because I wanted what my sponsor had, and Jay had done everything. And I wanted what he had, because he is an attractive personality, and he's an attractive individual. And Harry would always, I'd roll up and he'd always say, you know, hey, how you doing, kid? And I'm like, no, I'm doing good. And, you know, Paul has been a trustee. He's been a delegate. He's gone through, all the way through area level. He's gone through district level. So I've got a service, kind of a lineage in my background where I've got these guys always pushing us to stay involved, always pushing us to be committee members, always pushing us to do something for Alcoholics Anonymous. And just the snapshot that I always want to remember, Harry, is we were at the San Antonio International. Anybody go to the International in San Antonio? Good for you guys. I do a lot of these things, and a lot of people don't raise their hand. This year will be my fourth International, and I've only got 16 years of sobriety. And I love Internationals, and you'll find out why. But here we are one more time. We're in San Antonio. We're in one of the six Hilton hotels, I think, that were down there because there's so many of them. And it was Harry's 55th AA birthday. And all of us middle-aged guys are in this bar, and we have a cake for him, and we're all huddled around. We're singing happy birthday. We're crying and everything. And these normies are passing by. And the normies are looking at the cake, and there's a 55 in the cake. And look, Harry got sober at 24. And, you know, you can do the math. And he didn't look, they're looking at the cake, they're looking at Harry, and I hear the laughter, and they're kind of, they're like, oh my God, and then the faces are dropping. And I heard it. One gal walked by, and she goes, God damn, that guy looked like he was rode hard and brought back wet. He don't look no 55. Harry was an outstanding member of Alcoholics Anonymous, a lovely guy. He was a wonderful husband. He was a great sponsor, and I'll always, forever remember Harry and how much joy he had at the International and all the things that he did, especially in the San Diego area. It was just incredible. Okay, so you got the lineage, you got the time and everything. Okay. I was born in the Badlands of Palos Verdes. And I was raised on the mean streets of Fountain Valley. So right off the bat, you know I'm a gangster, right? We always like to say, God, I grew up in such a bad household, and I grew up in such a bad time, and no wonder I'm an alcoholic, and that's not my story. As my sponsor told me when I came, and he says, you were born a white male in Southern California. You hit the lottery. Because there's not going to be a whole bunch of resistance for you, Trick. You know, you could have done whatever you wanted. And I'm like, well, God, but, you know, we had alcoholism in our family. It's like, no. This is the kind of sponsor direction and reports that I was getting early on. And he was right. And you know what? There are no hospitals. I have to come clean. You know, there are no hospitals in Palos Verdes. But it sounds really good when I say that. I was actually born in Santa Monica, but we were living in Palos Verdes. And as we know, you know, things happen when you're born. Anybody born in the violent alcoholic home? Josh? You know, I qualify for this program in a lot of respects. When I came to you, I had 3 DUIs. I had a wet reckless. I drank myself out of a house. I drank myself out of a marriage. And 95 was a very bad year. And you know, come in here bad and everything, but, you know, those of us that grew up in the alcoholic home know what it's like. I could never invite you over. I was so ashamed of the way we lived and how it went down, and I spent more time at my friends' homes, and, you know, my sanctuary was my room. And I don't know if we have any fantasy people out there who felt really safe in their room and did a lot of things. This is before the internet, and I was listening to cassette tapes at the time and things like that. But, you know, when I closed that door, I left all the violence and all the noise outside, hopefully. And, you know, it was an amazing thing to grow up in the alcoholic home because I could never predict what was going to be happening when I'd come home. Was there going to be food flying? Was there going to be the massive argument? Was there going to be various levels of undress between the stepdad and mom there? I mean, there were so many injurious things that were going on all the time. It was just crazy. And I was an only child, and I would stay in the room most of the time, and I would always tell myself, I'm never going to be like these people. And that's where my self-centeredness was born. Right off the bat, I got this idea that I wasn't getting enough, that I'm better than, and that I deserve more. I didn't know what entitlement meant, but I invented it right there in Fountain Valley in my room. And I swore that, you know, I would never do this to anybody else, and I was going to break this chain, and you know, I deserve better. And I don't know about you, but I like to be naughty when people are telling me what to do. I'm alcoholic. I like to do the opposite myself. And I like to have the results of that. And I don't care if it's going to get me in trouble or if it's going to get me beat or whatever. But, you know, I like to be naughty. And early on, I started sneaking out. See, the thing is back in Fountain Valley in the 60s, you know, I had the cool room. You know, my mom would try. Bless her heart, she would try. Let me tell you a little bit about my mom, just so you have a framework, so I can kind of qualify of what a real alcoholic is. When we found my mom, I had just graduated high school at 16. It was 1976, and within about 4 months, she died. When we found her, there was 12 vodka bottles under her bed. I don't remember her ever being really sober. She was always in some state of drunkenness. And I remember as these snapshot moments, just like what Josh had, you remember these screensaver moments that are burned into your psyche. I just remembered my little burr head in the back of the LTD, going to the liquor store, and one more time she's scratching another bad check, and the pop-off is going to be rolling around next to me in the backseat, and we're going to go home, and she might get in a wreck because she got in a bunch of wrecks. And I just remember, yeah, one more time, we're going to go to the store. We're going to go to the store. My mom, bless her heart, she went to Schick-Schadl 3 times. Does anybody remember Schick-Schadl? Actually, it's still going on. If you ever fly to Seattle like I do about once every 2 months, they'll have an advertisement for the Schadl hospitals. And what this is aversion therapy. They roll you in and treat you like a king or a queen when you get there. They give you a nice room. There's no honor bar, but they give you a nice room. And then when treatment time comes, they say, okay, and they reel you up to the bitchinest bar you've ever seen. It's got everything. And it's like, well, what do you like? Of course, hers was vodka and more of it. And what they do is they ply you with vodka, and they make you sick, and they ply you with vodka, and they make you sick, and they do it over and over and over again until hopefully you can't stand the sight, smell, or the sound of any vodka. She went there 3 times. And it was so classic because you can tell when she came out because she was all shaky, and she was drinking carbonated water with lemon. And we've all seen people that, you know, that are, they're in various stages of denial when they're not drinking, you know, this untreated alcoholism, we call it. And she was just a wreck, but she never got it. She never got it. And I remember when, of course, she was on top of my amends list in my inventory. And thank God I had a sponsor to, like, you know, weed me down on this lady about, you know, look, she was doing the best she could with what she got. She was a freaking lush, man. She couldn't have this thing that we call AA. And I don't remember her going to any meetings or anything like that at all. But, you know, she died at the age of 54. My sister died at the age of 52. She was 13 years older than I am. And then there's me. And I should have killed each and every one of you if I was passing you by on the freeway, because I am not a bar drinker. I'm a car drinker. I do my best work in the car. And I drove drunk thousands of times. Thousands of times. I'm a smart alcoholic. By the time I had my second or third DUI, you know, I'm signing my own court card. I know how this thing works. And your AA meetings, holy crap, man. I remember the AA meetings. I'd get there late and leave early. Obviously, it was a cult because there was a wicker basket going around, and guys are holding hands during frickin' prayers. You know, and I'm an atheist. And I'm in with this group of these ragtag losers and quitters, and they're, you know, it's like I couldn't do it. You tell an alcoholic what to do, and we do the opposite. It was not until I got so bad that you guys really started looking good. When I started sneaking out, I think, you know, my parents always had liquor in their house, and I never did sneak any of the vodka. You know, later on I did, but I didn't really, it wasn't really my drink of choice per se. But, you know, the dad always had the hams, it was called a hams kegger, a little pony kegger in the refrigerator. I'd take a hit off of that every now and then, but I hated the taste of it, the beer and stuff. And it wasn't until one of the nights that I'm sneaking out of my window, I'd go out with all the neighbors out there, you know, that were hanging out. And one of them had a funny looking bottle with a twist off. And he was saying, hey, do you want some of this? Call me a people pleaser. Or whatever. I never asked what it was. You know, if you said, do you want some of this? I didn't care. I'd always say, yes. I mean, it could have been dog dew wrapped up in tissue. Yes. You know, I just wanted to be a part of, I guess. So we're under the street lamp that one night, and the long bottle came out, and I took a pull off this thing, and yeah, God, it was kind of strawberry-ish. It was kind of fruity, kind of cool. And I read it, and it said Strawberry Hill. Now, for the new folks here, ask your sponsor what Strawberry Hill was. You know, it's kind of like what Tina used to drink. And I want to thank Tina, A, for coming down here. She was speaking last night up in Santa Barbara, and she found out that I was here, and she said, I've never heard you speak. Can I come down? I said, sure, no problem. Thanks for doing that. That was really sweet. So ask your sponsor what Strawberry Hill was. Strawberry Hill really was, in a nutshell, it was like MD 2020. I'm in Ventura, that's right. You guys know what MD is. And you know what Night Train is? Nice! The Silk Sheeters in Hermosa Beach have no idea what that stuff is, man. Right on. Love it. Strawberry Hill was a wine that never met a grape. I mean, seriously, it was this bathroom concoction with a lot of frickin' flavor in it, and it used to stain the shit out of your shoes when you threw it up. Really, really. So, you know, God, it's Kool-Aid, and then when I had Annie Green Springs, which was a sister of the Strawberry Hill, I didn't have a lot of money, and I was boosting it at 7-Eleven, so I didn't have a big choice. But, you know, it was warm when it went down, and it started changing my perception. I thought, God, this is cool. But I'm part of these guys, this group of cool guys that were my age, and they were all sneaking out of their house. We're all being naughty. We used to make surfboards in our garages back then, and skateboards, and this is during the Dogtown days, and this is towards the end of the 60s and the early 70s. And we're bolting trucks on water skis, and we're making surfboards. And my buddy, I was a sander. Okay, I had the rotary sander, and you wear the respirator and the hat. And we used to work for Infinity Surfboards in Huntington Beach, and they'd bring blanks down to our place, and we'd glass them, and I was doing all the dirty job. And one day, my hero walked in. His name was Eric P. I don't know if he's alive tonight, but he had just won the Huntington contest. And back then, that was the crown jewel pretty much of anything in North America as a contest, the Huntington contest. He came in, and I was sanding one of his guns because he was going off to the islands, and he said, "You know, kid, you do a really good job. Do you want some of this?" And he pulled out this little bindle thing. And we went upstairs, and out came a candle and a piece of foil and a hair clip, and he put some of this brown powder on this thing, and we had a straw, and he said, "Hit it," and I did, and it was wonderful. Now, for the newcomer, I just smoked heroin. Am I a drug addict? Not yet. But for this alcoholic, that was going to be my reference point until I was 38 years old. I was 17 at the time. And I tried to recreate that feeling that it was such a strong, nice, my nose itched, you know, my ears were ringing a little bit, and I kind of sat back. But man, all the noise went away. All of the pain of growing up went away. All my zits fell off. You've heard people like that, you know. I could dance with girls, and it's like, and believe me, I was not going out and purchasing heroin every day and doing that, but I got a frame of reference that I chased for the next 20 years. And I didn't start knocking off liquor stores, and I didn't start, you know, doing that whole lifestyle. But I started drinking a little bit more because I found out that I felt better and I could do you better with a little bit of a buzz on. And that was my story for the next 20 years. I mean, I drank a lot. I got a chance to get out of high school, and I was a tennis player, and I'll tell you, you know, I represented in college, and I went to UC Santa Barbara later on, but, you know, one of the crown jewels in tennis, if you're a tennis player, is playing up in Ojai, and that's where all the colleges go. You have to have an invitation. All the high schools went. And my first year of college, I was at Harvard College, and me and my doubles partner got to represent our college. And we were there at the Motel 6. It's right off of Seaward. I know you guys know where it is. It's right on the bound. It was a luxury hotel. And you know what? There were some bros next door, and they were like, they were smoking some pot, I think. And it was weird because, you know, we felt so sorry for them. They had these little teeny pinners, little teeny. And let me say this. Drugs is part of my story, and I know I don't have to, you know, I don't have to apologize to this crowd because this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and believe me, I've had 8 years of general service. I know what our primary purpose is. But there must have been something back in Bill's days because they, you know, it took them all the way to page 6 to talk about medicine cabinets and high-powered sedatives. Must have been a problem. But I am an alcoholic, trust me. This is just my story. And these bros next door are from Compton, and you know, obviously they were poor. We were starting to, you know, do bong loads and stuff back then, smoke a little pot. But they had these little stupid little joint things. You know, we said, do you want some of ours? They go, oh, try some of ours. So the night before our match, you know, we figured, you know, we're going to lend a hand of ourselves. These guys were obviously disadvantaged. I'll smoke their little pin-ass, New York little pinners. We'll help out. So we started doing it. And this was different, man. This was a different high. This was some weird chemical weed, man. This was something bizarre. And it had a spearmint taste to it, too, man. It was like, what the fuck? And it's like, next thing I know, man, we ran around that parking lot for 15 hours. And I go back to those guys. Obviously, we showed up, man, the next morning, and we're all gumbied out. We're hit. The ball's going dot, 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 dot. Our coach is going, we got bageled 0-0, and we were a good team. And our coach is like, what? Oh, man, we got back to that frickin' Motel 6, and we went to those guys, and we're like, what the hell is it? And they go, oh, man, it's just a little Sherman action, a little cannabinol. I go, I don't do animal tranquilizers. No more small pinners. Not for this alcoholic. It was fun. I mean, those days were fun. I loved drinking. It was great. But with anything good, man, it starts to taper down. And when I got to UC Santa Barbara, I'll tell you, I was a daily drinker. I was there as a junior. I walked in, and the one piece of furniture I had, you probably remember some of these old guys here. Do you remember that that furniture that we used to have where you had the lid, and you open it up, and there'd be like a record player in there and like that? Remember that? Yeah, it's called a turntable, a stereo. I'm old. So I gutted that bad boy out. I put a mirror on top of that lid, and I jigsawed some round holes in there, and I brought in a bar to my dorm room, first year. Of course, I was a hit. All the other freshmen are like going, dang, how'd you do that? How'd you get that in here? My blood alcohol level matched my GPA for the next 2 years. It was not pretty, and I got out of there by the skin of my teeth, and that's where I got my first DUI in Isla Vista. I dream about Isla Vista. Oh, God. If there's anybody here in their last 30 days, and you're going to go out and get busted in Isla Vista. That jail is so cool, man. They give you a freaking McDonald's. There's really no gangbangers up there. You don't have to look tough and stuff, and it's really comfortable. It's like casual. I went there on Halloween. If you're ever going to go to jail, newcomer, go Halloween. Josh, you would have loved it. The devil and an angel were sitting on the bench. Fuck. There was a pirate in there. I had never seen, it was before the pirate craze. I'd never seen a pirate in public, man. It was like, fuck, it's so cool. And then there was me, the hors d'oeuvre. I don't do well in jail, unlike you people. I mean, I never got the hang of it. I swore after my third DUI and the wet reckless, I go, I can't do this anymore. I'm getting old and I'm getting tired. I tried to get married. She knew what she was getting into. I was a self-centered ass, bar none. 95 was a very, very bad year for this alcoholic. I didn't mention, I love music. I followed the Grateful Dead for 15 years. If you've ever been in the parking lot of any Dead show, you could get anything you'd ever want. It was the happiest place on earth. And I am so proud. I'm so proud to be here because my first Dead show was in your little bull rink here in the county fairgrounds. It was 1984. And it was a heavenly experience. And I'd follow those guys around for the next 12 and a half years. I went to over 100 shows. I went to a bunch of Jerry shows. And what happened August 6, 1995, Jerry Garcia died. And the frickin' fun was over. I was spiraling out of my alcoholism. She had left. And I had wrecked my company car. And my boss called me and he said, listen, we're going to give you 30 days to get your shit together. Call us when you're done. Boom. This was before HR. And like all good gangsters, my parents came to pick me up because my wife had called. And it's funny because Astrid spoke here Friday. I ended up also at the ABC Center in Indio, California. It was the last house in the block. And every guy in there was on his third strike, and every woman was there that had lost their children. And then there was me. My nickname in my treatment center was Prince Valium. Because I like to cut out the middleman when I'm going through a divorce, I'm depressed. So I prescribed myself some antidepressants, and I was going down to Tijuana twice a month, and I was putting them down my underwear, and I was getting jars of Valiums and all kinds of stuff. And it just got worse, never better. And what happened was, is when I was at that ABC center, I detoxed there, and they took us to an AA speaker meeting. They piled us in the short bus, and it went up to Portola, and there was a guy that was up at a podium, and he looked pretty sharp, and he was talking about his story. And I had never been to a speaker meeting before, because I was going to do your AA, but you know me, I'm signing my own court cards. I'm not going to join this thing. And I resonated with his stories. I was one of the lucky guys that I fixated on the similarities and not the differences. And what happened was, is I just got this inspiration that I think I can do this. So as soon as I got out, I escaped the ABC Center. I paid $825 for 30 days. I stayed 5. I detoxed, and I left. And I told my dad, I said, I'm going to go to, I just need to go to AA. I think I can do AA. And he's like, no, stay 30 days. You paid for it. I go, no, I got this. And I went to 3 meetings a week at the Fellowship Hall in Palm Desert. I went morning, noon, and night. I went to a CANAAA. I read all the literature, and I got fulfilled. And I went back to my boss, and I said, listen, man, I need a break. Can I get the F out of California? So I went back to work, and I stayed in probation. And he said, yeah, I want you to come back to the Carolinas.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
You know, that was 1995, and I'm here to report that I'm with that same employer now for 28 years. They stood by me at a time they could have flushed me, because back then it was not a sin to throw away alcoholics. But for whatever reason is, they gave me a shot, I paid for it myself, and it happened. Let me tell you about my first sponsor in AA. It was down in Florida, and if you know, any weird news event that you ever hear, you got to ask yourself if there's some weird mass killing or beheading or like any kind of Satan ritual, you got to ask yourself the question, Germany or Florida? Because you're going to be pretty close on where that originated from. So I'm down in Florida, and I meet this guy. He says, Pete, you don't have to go to a lot of meetings. You know, go to the ones you like. Go to speaker meetings because they're entertainment, you know, and they won't ask you a lot of stuff. So pick the meetings you want to go to. Please don't read that blue book, man. It was written in 1939. It's horrible English. You won't identify with it, you know, do that. Make sure you start hitting on all the women in the meetings you go to because, you know, they're fragile and they have low self-esteem like you. So, you know, go ahead and go with those guys. And for whatever you do, don't get this higher power thing. It's code for religion and it's bad. And I'm here to report to you that jackass that I had for a sponsor in Florida was me. Because I was sponsoring myself. I stayed dry for 3.5 years. I was a fire hazard. I got to go back to California because my boss came to me and said, we need you back there. Will you be okay? And I said, yeah. And then I met her. I like live music, and I like alternative music, and I go to these things called the Hootenanny down in Southern Orange County. And Social Distortion was playing, the Cramps were playing, Billy Zoom of X had his own side project, and I had to be there, and you know, I'd been going to those things a lot. And I met her, almost 6 foot, kind of goth looking, long straight hair, my type. She's drinking lemonade, I'm drinking lemonade, and next thing you know, I got her number and we started dating. On the third date, she lived near me, she lived in Bel Air, and I'm in the South Bay, close enough. And on the any length. So on the third date, we're on the Santa Monica Pier, and I'm you know, I'm a young, semi-young guy, and I'm like, you know, we're out for dinner, and she says, you know, are you an AA? And I'm sitting there with my O'Douls. And I'll go, oh, yo, yes, of course. Yeah, I'm an AA. And she goes, you know, I've never heard you talk about having a sponsor or having a home group. And I'm thinking, Does she know that I drove her here tonight? And then she says, you know, I've never heard you talk about your sobriety date. I don't know where you go. And, you know, and I'm thinking, does she know that I'm buying dinner? And then, you know, I'm thinking, God, she's getting ruder and ruder. And here I am. I'm being a nice guy. She goes, listen, Pete, it's evident that you're not in AA. You might be around AA, but it's clearly evident you're not in AA. And I suggest you get off the effing fence, because I don't date guys in AA unless they've done a sexual inventory or at least a fifth step. And I'm like, how rude. But I got to admit, I heard in the rooms that this is a program of attraction, and I wanted what she had. We all get here different ways. For whatever reason, the next night I ran down. It was on a Sunday night that I talked to her. On a Monday night, I ran into this men's stag, men's only stag in Hermosa Beach, and I'm here to report I have never left. I was in these rooms, and these guys were telling their stories, and they're talking about killing themselves. One guy outlined how he was going to run into this abutment on the 110 freeway in a couple weeks, and he was going to kill himself, and he detailed very vividly how he was going to do this. I had to come back the next week, you know? Fuck, is this all talk or what? You know, so you piqued my interest. And these guys are sharing a lot of weird shit, man, really costly stuff that I wouldn't bring out in public. And then I did this thing, you know, this guy in front of me, I heard, oh, you really should get a sponsor. And there's this guy with long hair, and I get resentment over guys with long hair or any hair. And he rips off this share in this meeting, and all these guys are like going, whoa. And some of the guys hated it. Some of the guys liked it. So I followed him out to the parking lot, and I said, excuse me, sir. He goes, my name is Jay. And I said, yeah, listen, I need help. Will you help me? I didn't plan on using those words or that term. I don't know where that came from. But he didn't say yes. And I heard, oh, God, these guys are going to fawn all over you if you do that. And he goes, meet me in the morning at my coffee shop and we'll talk about it. And I'm like, this doof, he doesn't know who he's got, man. I am going to be a great addition to this freaking cult. And I'm here to report that the hardest thing I've ever had to do around here so far was to ask that man for help. It was really tough, and it just came out. And I'm here to report that since that time, he's been my only sponsor, and we've done the steps, and he's never gotten over on me. He's never lied to me. He's never disappointed me so that I had to frickin' look for another one. And I am so grateful for Jay, because he was that guy that I wanted to always be. He was almost like a father figure to me. He's 4 years older than me. He's got a boatload of sobriety. But he came to me and he said, listen, watch me. Watch the way I treat others. Watch the way I treat my employees. Have dinner with me anytime you want. Watch the way I treat my family. And if this is something that is attracted to you, you can have it. And that really got my attention, because he was being intimate. Spirituality is something that points way beyond the ordinary and way beyond our limited self. Spirituality happens in the least time that you expect it to. But it, for me, spirituality was like the wind. You can't see it. You can feel it sometimes, but you know it's there internally. You know spirituality is around you when you experience it. And spirituality is not of this earth. It's not something that you can possess. It's not something that you can contain. But you know it's around. You know it's happening. And I trudged. I went to 3 meetings a week with this guy. I'm also a regular member of the Roxbury Men's Stag in Beverly Hills on Wednesday nights. Oldest men's stag west of the Mississippi. Started in 1946. Been going there ever since. And I've met more awesome guys in the men's stags that I go to, because they have the answers to all my possible questions. And they give it away for fun and for free. It's just an amazing thing. Now, spirituality, I was not a big spiritual guy when I got here. I know you can't believe that. I was finishing up my steps, and it was September of 1999. And my sponsor came to me and he said, Pete, give me $200. And I'm like, okay, here it starts. It's like, you know, on the west side of L.A., they got the Gucci meetings for the women. They all have the same Coach purses. They go to the special houses, you know, and they go shopping together, and they have their own little special gig. For the guys, you have the businessman's meeting, the Uncle John's and stuff. I've been to them all. So I figure, okay, I'm going to have to buy this guy some Hugo Boss and a Rolex, and he's going to keep me sober, right? I gave him the $200, and I waited. A month later, Tuesday night was my gig with him for the hour working with the book each week. And he says, "Do you ever wonder what I did with the $200? And I said, "I'd love to know." He said, "I enrolled you in the lottery for housing at the international convention that's coming up in Minneapolis next year. I think you should go." I'm a newcomer in AA. I'm like, "What's an international convention?" He says it's the one place on the planet about every 5 years where all these people from everywhere come out and have a good time. I think you should go. My mind said I don't have the time, I don't have the desire, I certainly didn't have the money. But out of my mouth, I just said yes. He'd always implored me, just say yes around here. This is an experiential experience you're going to have. It's an experiential program. If you say no to stuff around here, your life is going to get narrow just like it was, and it's going to get dark, and pretty soon you're going to be totally unhappy. I suggest you just say yes, and I have. Just like when the Bindle was around or the hit or whatever. You bet. Let's go. Let's do it. But this is the spiritual part of the program now. I'm actually letting my guard down, and I'm going to trust somebody I don't even know. And what happened was I had a bitchin' time at this international. For me, it came down to the last day. It's just like in every meeting, man. We had this big-ass meeting where we had 55,000 people in the Twin Stadium in Minneapolis. Tom I, who I know personally from Southern Pines, North Carolina, was speaking. He had a great talk, and everybody clapped, and it was great. And then we all got up to say the silly prayer. You know what we do when you do here? I'm a newcomer. This can't be real. It's like we're going to really do that here in public? We all got up and we held hands, and I looked out and I saw you. I saw all of you. And it occurred to me, why are all these people here at this one spot saying this silly prayer? This thing probably works. And one of my buddy's wives turns around and she said, "Pete, everybody in this stadium's had a bottom." And I'm like, "That's random." Thanks for sharing, though, Trixie, or whatever her name was. But that's exactly what I freaking needed. I needed to see you. I needed to see this commitment that everybody was having fun. And we had fun that week. I have leaned into this program ever since that time. There is a God, and it's not me. The closest I ever got to a Bible was anytime I was in a hotel room, it might be in that drawer. When I got sober, it was really funny because there was one symbolism in religion that I hated. And it wasn't the crucifix, even though it was really close, because here you got a guy, a dead guy on a cross nailed up there. His father did it, and I'm thinking, this is what they're going to do to his favorite son? What are they going to do to me? So I didn't embrace that, but I'm thinking, what is the one thing that I got to get over, because I got to embrace this thing? And it was the praying hands. If you all come to my house in Torrance, California, every single room that I've got, I have got some kind of praying hands in there, whether it's macrame, needlepoint, sketches, oil painting, pottery. I even had some guys on eBay rip off a couple tombstones in Germany of the praying hands, and it was copper. I didn't know it was ripped off till I got them, so I didn't endorse that. But I've got praying hands all over my house. I've got bookends everywhere. See, I'm a salesman. And I got the whole West Coast, so when I got some downtime, I'm in an antique store, and I'm firing through the door, and they always ask, "Are you looking for anything?" "Praying hands!" And I love it, because every now and then you nail something. See, for this alcoholic, I got to remember where I came from. It was dark. There was no self-esteem. I knew what shoes you guys had in my first couple of meetings, because my head was down there. I knew if you had laces or not. And it's not that way today. Spirituality is a very funny thing because we think some guys have it and we think others don't. Again, it's like the wind. when I was new, you know, my sponsor says, you know, your job is to say a little prayer in the morning and say a prayer at night. And, you know, if that's the way you're going to make your start, make your start. So every morning I had the kind of the same way to go to work each day. I picked out some kind of symbol, a sign or a plant, a tree. And every morning I said the simplest prayer, and it was help. And it morphed into other things, please and some other things. And on the way home, if I didn't drink that day on the way home and I had another little spot that I'd look over, I'd say thanks. I prayed to my bedspread for 2 years. It was hard. But the funniest things would happen. Every day, something good would happen that would get my attention. Whether I'm going to go into this gnarly negotiation session with this multi-billion-dollar customer, and something out of the frickin' blue would happen that would go my way in there that was completely unexpected. I started giving that up to this spirit, this higher power thing. Now, of course, my higher power looks like Jerry Garcia. He's got a long beard. He's got a nice Stratocaster, flowing robes. And it happened over and over and over again. And to this day, new stuff and fun stuff happens every day. And it's my higher power showing off. He's reminding me that I'm always here before anything you do. I don't have to find God. He's already found. He's around. It's my job to just kind of acknowledge it. I was going to the Rodeo group when I was new, and it's one of these really cool meetings where, you know, the stars go, and I love watching strippers and Hollywood stars try to get sober. It's really cool. And, you know, I'm dancing around this meeting. It's a really cool meeting. They don't have it in the old place, but in the church there off of Cannon Street, they have it there. And this guy came up to me, and he asked me to sponsor him. And I was a year sober, and I was appalled. I mean, I didn't know what to do. So I ran back to Jay and I said, JJ, this guy just asked me for help last night. And Jay goes, well, what did you say? Did you say yes? I go, yeah. I said yes. But I said, he's gay. I don't know anything about being gay. He goes, no, dipweed. He says, your job is to take him through the steps. You're supposed to guide him. He knows how to be gay. Other side? Yeah. Hello. If I would have said no to Pete that night, I wouldn't have the appreciation or the experience of what it's like to be homosexual. We got all the way up to the fourth step, and he basically turned to me and he says, I can't do this. I can't tell you all of the things that I have done. I can't tell you what I do on any given moment. I can't tell you the way I think. And I felt this shame and this remorse from another human being that I've never felt before. And he didn't make it. He spun out. He went out and stuff. But if I would have said no to that, I probably would have been tainted, you know, that I would have my belief system get in my way. This saying yes around here and doing the sponsorship thing is one of the most inconvenient frickin' things you can do. But the payoff, less like Josh said, is the reduction of self. I am so honored to be able to sponsor all the psychopaths that I sponsor. I laugh more with my guys and what they go through and their triumphs and their tribulations. It is outstanding. I've never had children. And I understand that the birthing room, when you have your first child or your second child or any child, has got to be the most spiritual place on earth. But for this alcoholic, I would not trade that across the table thing when you're doing a fifth step with one of your guys or gals, and that light starts coming on, and tears are shed, and experiences are shared, and you're getting that one-on-one connection. With my sponsor, I drove into three different meetings a week, and we called it the cone of silence. We'd get in my car, and then we'd share all of our sick stuff that we knew about each other, and I know everything that he's not proud of, and he knows everything I'm not proud of. And he did that early on because he says, I don't want you to share that in the meeting. You come to me and share all your stuff. Your job around here is to tell those guys how you stayed sober today. And thank God he did that. Thank God he had that kind of tough love. But this guy, I mean, there is no better time in the history of mankind to get sober. The meetings that we have around town are so cool. I am so proud of this group because you have got a whole breadth of long-timers here, and you've got in-betweeners, and you've got the new folks. Anytime that Bob L. is in the room, I know that this meeting is in safe hands because that man's been carrying this torch for a long time. And thank God for the long-timers that are still here, because you guys are getting picked off when you go to the hospitals and they give you all of this pain medication and all this stuff. I mean, we've had a lot of old-timers go out. We all have to be diligent. We all have to, like, watch out for each other, man, because it's rough out there. We're not supposed to succeed. But one day at a time, I know that this can work for you because it's been working for me. And as long as I keep doing this thing and I stay active, and I continue to still say yes, and I continue to do this thing and have this love affair that I have with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I keep putting myself out there to do stuff in the future, whether it's a commitment or whether it's doing something like this or it's just showing up for one of my guys, it puts pressure on this salesman alcoholic not to drink one day at a time. That's the kind of thing that I needed. I am so looking forward to this international that's coming up. You know, it's going to be great because it's going to be in really hot weather. The women are going to be scantily clad. And, you know, we're looking forward to it. It's just going to be one of those things. And you guys probably won't be able to do this, but one of the secrets to one of my deals about being able to stay sober is, you know, we protect our anonymity around here a lot. And it's really important for some of us to do that because it can impact you in many, many ways, socially or economically or whatever. But one of my rally cries that I've adopted early on was, I wanted to allow others to recover with me. Look, all my clients knew I was a drunk. I would show up hammered to half of the sales calls, and I'd have a 4-martini lunch and all that good stuff. But I wanted to show them that this thing works. So I allowed others to recover with me, and so far I still show up. And ex-presidents of mine and other customers that I've known forever, they always look me in the eye and they say, how's it going? And I'll say, it's just going absolutely incredible. I'll end with this. You're going to be asked to do some things that you don't want to do around here and you don't think it's a good idea and you can't understand, you know, what does this have to do with drinking? In 94, my sponsor, one more time, came to me and said, listen, we're going to go down to Belize, and we'd really like to have you go. You got some expertise in construction. We'd like you to go. And you know the story. My mind said, I don't have the time. I don't have the desire. I don't have the money. But out of my mouth, I just said yes. And we went down there. There were 6 of us, and they're all guys from the home group, and we're not part of this guy's church, but we went down there, and we built some houses for the poorest of the poor. It was way in the backwoods. I had to get like 16 shots before I went. It was 90 degrees and 90% humidity. There was no power. There was no running water where we were at. We were in the rainforest, and we're working. And it was hard work, and we're like, God, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? But little images of the higher power would show up, and the lady that we were building a house for would come out with her naked child was there, and she had nothing. But she would go in, and she'd put on her best dress, and she might have one papaya, and she'd share it with us. And we couldn't speak because we didn't know the language. And it was really crazy because on the way home, the women of that town had written us a letter because we had donated some computers and we built 28 houses, block houses, put the roofs on them with a rain collector. And on the way home, one of our guys spoke Spanish and he read this letter. And it said, why do you guys come here? You're 4,000 miles away. Why did you come here? We're so thankful, and we just don't know why, but you're heaven sent. And I'll tell you what, for this self-centered alcoholic, when I got to my little apartment, when I was going through my divorce, and I was paying back all the money, and I didn't have a lot of self-esteem because I was a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was doing my steps, and I wasn't dating, and I was just keeping my head down. And I got back to my little one-bedroom apartment in Torrance, and I saw that I had carpeting. Don't get excited, tweakers. And I picked up my phone, and there was a dial tone. And I went over to my ratty little sink, and there was water coming out of the faucet. And I was so grateful. I don't know your story, but you got a story. This program will work for you, and it's full of miracles. Don't leave before the miracle. It could be you. Thank you.
Let's give our speaker another hand. Wow, it's getting worse. I would like to thank Jackie C. for reading Chapter 3, Eric B. for reading Chapter 5, and Wanda for the 12 traditions. All the speaker meetings, however, will be recorded this weekend. CDs will be available in the hospitality area for $7 after the meeting. It's over there. At this time, Ryan W. is going to read Vision for You, then lead us out in the Serenity Prayer.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.